Hello, busybodies. Welcome to another episode of The Busyness Paradox. I'm Frank Butler, here with Paul Harvey.
Good day.
And on today's episode, what do we got?
We got bot firing.
Bot firing. The heck?
You ever been fired by a bot?
I have not been fired by a bot.
Me neither.
I think I've been annoyed by a bot on Twitter before, but I...
Yeah. I think I've lost an argument with a bot on Reddit before, but haven't been fired by one yet. I look forward to the opportunity. But a lot of people have, apparently.
Really?
Indeed. At least employees of Amazon have been getting fired by bots for a few years now. Most recently in the news, we've seen complaints from delivery drivers experiencing that unfortunate fate of finding out by apparently email that their services are no longer required. Goodbye. Without any real recourse opportunities. I guess there is an appeal process, but at least based on this, the accounts that are, you know, showing up in the press, it doesn't seem to go in the ex-employee's favor very often.
It's odd just to think that you get fired by email. I don't know. To me, it just sounds like, how can we be less human to our humans in the company?
I'm wondering, you know, I'm not a big fan of email, and I sometimes go longer than I should without checking my email. I could see myself being fired from a job and still showing up for like a week before I finally check my email and say, oh, wow, I got fired 10 days ago. Damn.
You probably wouldn't notice until you got your paycheck, right? It's like, wait, this is only 2 weeks' pay.
There'd probably be signs along the way. How come I stopped getting paid and my passwords don't work?
Ooh, I don't, man. Yeah, that's so, I don't even have words to describe how frustrating this is. You know, it goes counter to the whole idea of treating humans like humans. You're fired by email?
Does a bit, but you know, this seems to be a recurring theme lately, but you could say this is another example of our kind of advice being taken too far. You know, we're always saying, focus on the outputs, focus on the results, not the amount of time spent working, amount of time at the desk, all the little proxy indicators of performance that we're always going on about. I mean, this is purely outcome results focused, right? They're being evaluated by a computer based on raw numbers, the ultimate embodiment of what we keep preaching about focusing on results.
Yeah.
Indicating once again that too much of anything can be problematic.
That's true. I mean, you're absolutely right. We talk frequently about how we should become more focused on output and less focused in on time spent. Although I think in this context, it's the time that's sort of driving some of the firing, right?
The time in terms of deliveries, you mean?
Yes. Like how many deliveries they're doing.
Yep. How many are on time? How many are, I can't remember the different metrics they have. They're all valid things, you know, the adherence to customer requests and things like that. You know, they're all things that are important to customers. So what's the problem? You know, it sounds like, hey, that's great. They've identified the relevant performance metrics and they're accurately measuring those metrics and making decisions based on them. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Apparently, you get fired by email is what goes wrong.
So what's interesting is that I believe Bloomberg is the one who spilled the beans on some of this more later firing. It's an article out of 2021, June 28th, 2021. And they interviewed 15 of these drivers that one of them, the story was picked up from that one being fired by email. The person was a veteran and he's like, I give 110% no matter what. He's like, I'm old school. I was doing my job. I didn't do anything wrong. But what they were apparently saying is that in this context, they interviewed 15 drivers, four of which were wrongly terminated, or so they claim. They're saying that the largely automated system is insufficiently attuned to the real world challenges drivers face every day. Amazon knew delegating work to machines would lead to mistakes and damaging headlines, but these former Amazon managers said, Amazon decided it was cheaper to trust the algorithms than pay people to investigate mistaken firings so long as the drivers could be replaced easily.
And that's the recurring theme you see through this case and a lot of other situations we talked about. Whenever there's a ready supply of people ready and willing to take the job that's been vacated by someone who's wrongly terminated or quits because of, you know, bad things, frustrations, there's very little incentive to fix those problems. If you're that easily replaceable, employee retention becomes, you know, desirable, but not the necessity it would be otherwise.
It's taking the supply and demand yeah. logic from economics and applying it to people, though, which is sad in its own way, if you really think about it. I mean, you were talking about people who are trying to earn a livelihood in some way or trying to pay rent or to take care of their families. And I've heard the stories associated with these Amazon drivers that included them carrying what, plastic bottles and jugs with them so they could go to the bathroom as they're driving because they would get fired so easily.
The warehouses.
That's taking it too far.
Yeah.
And I think in some states probably violates their required break rules like that.
Yeah. Probably violates a lot of things. Now, Amazon has always pushed back against those claims and, you know, who knows what's true and what isn't. But it's a little bit frustrating to me because I think there's a lot of potential here being pissed away. Might have to edit that. By this kind of misuse, you know, if you think about this sort of artificial intelligence driven assessment or employee evaluation, there's a lot of reasons why this could be a good thing. Not just the fact that it's primarily focused on results and outcomes. Although, you know, this sort of system probably could be designed in such a way that it was evaluating people based on face time and time spent at desk or those silly things. I think it's kind of telling that, as far as I know, no company has gone down that road with AI. You know, when you're developing an assessment system like this, you're going to focus on the things that matter, not the silly things, which is where the purely human-based employee evaluation can be so problematic, with perceptions being biased and influenced by silly behaviors and someone's appearance and all that stuff that we talked about in the perceptions episode. And there's so much you can do with this. It's much more objective than humans are, right. Much more accurate, much more efficient. It's not as disruptive. You don't have to take an hour out of your workday every quarter or year or whatever it is to do it, these awkward assessments, employee evaluation meetings with your boss. It's not to get all academic, but some of my research on psychological entitlement, one of the things that we keep consistently finding is that the more objective feedback is, more concrete performance results are, the less biased employees can be in terms of, you know, you got one employee who thinks they're great, but their boss and everyone else doesn't really see them that way. It's hard to fight the wrong battle when you've got the numbers sitting right in front of you. And they can be designed, and they often are, that they come at you in real time. So you know what your performance is as you're performing. There's no waiting till the end of the year to find out if your boss thinks you've been performing at a high enough level or whatever. You know, you can know every day in the moment. Okay, here's how I did today. Here's how my coworkers did today. There's a lot of good, is what I'm saying, that could come out of this. But this kind of misuse of it is really giving it a bad name.
Well, this type of use is certainly very extreme, I would say, in how it's being applied. And in this context, if you're not taking into account real-world challenges that people are going to face every day, whether it's traffic, because you can't predict an accident, or if it's having to stop and use the restroom, whatever it is, it's creating an almost an impossible or Sisyphean sort of environment, right?
Potentially. You could make the argument that an AI system will, over time, learn to take those factors into account in some way. But the problem is the learning curve, every mistake that gets made is someone's job. It's not like we usually think of AI machine learning happening in a kind of a low consequence environment while it's figuring out all the nuances to the extent that, you know, computer systems ever can. There's, you know, there are limitations to that. But without the human involvement, even at the end of this long learning curve, mistakes are like that are always going to be made. Because like you say, there's always going to be more stuff that no existing computer, algorithmic simulation, whatever you want to call it, can account for. Black swan events. You know, the stuff that driver gets hit by a meteor fragment or something on the way to a delivery. Like there's
those one-offs.
There's always going to be those one-offs that without human intervention. And really, anyone who's remotely legit in the artificial intelligence world, I think, from what, and I'm not one of those people, but from what I know or what I've read, is that no one really thinks that AI is going to be ever its own thing. Like, there's always going to have to be a human, what do you call it, moderator, or, you know, someone there to augment it.
Humans got to have their hands in the pot, yeah. Right? I mean, truly. Because it's got to help shape what that decision means or that information means to help with the system, right? Right. Especially in the case of these one-offs, right? You use the one-off example of a meteor hitting the truck, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. It's one of those that, okay, the human can step in and say, well, we know that it's going to lead to this outcome, even though the system might not predict it. And so that way you get more accurate output then, right? Because you're having a human get involved saying it's probably going to be a lot worse than what you're predicting it be based on your prior experiences, just because we know that a meteor is going to probably destroy the vehicle and make it unusable. And you just hope that the driver's not been killed in the process, right? And that they're okay and they can walk away unscathed, sort of Men in Black style or whatever, right? But that's just it, is that human-assisted aspect of it. And we were just hiring here a new data analytics position. And one of the research presentations from one of the candidates was actually on something very similar to this idea, or pretty much exactly to this. And what they basically were discussing was theme park admissions and predicting attendance. And they had data for this. And they basically had human experts making predictions. They had pure AI making predictions. And then they had human-assisted AI, basically. So they had three different versions of it. And they found that while the pure AI was pretty good at predicting it, the humans were pretty close, but neither were as good as the human and the AI system working together. And we're talking about, it was a pretty large gap in there. And he had this graph that talked about the daily results from the actual to what the system predicted. And if you look at it, there was a lot of peaks and valleys that were way off. You know, overall, it was like the human, I predicted like 69%. The AI system was 71% accurate, but the two together was like 93 or 5. It was much greater. And just watching the daily movement of it in that graph was so incredible, because it was much smoother and closer to accuracy because of those things like the Black Swan events, right? One of the things that there was with this theme park was, I believe there was a major death of a beloved figure in that country, and it was very clear that that was going to impact attendance to that park. The system wouldn't have caught it, but the humans did. And so that's why that human intervention with the AI led to those better outcomes.
Yeah, I found another example of a study like that after you had mentioned something about that the other day. Very different context, but arrives at the same conclusion. It's a Harvard pathology study from 2016, where they were identifying breast cancer cells. I can put a link to this article I found about it. But so Forbes article says, on its own, the automated diagnostic method was able to accurately identify cancer cells roughly 92% of the time. This figure stands just shy of the success rate of human pathologists, who accurately identify cancer cells about 96% of the time. But together, 99.5%.
That's incredible. That's the game changer. Talk about early intervention. If you can identify that stuff early, and you increase your chances of accuracy, that's, in this context, that's lives saved.
Yeah. It's that sort of thing that leads me to say that I don't think, we have this notion of artificial intelligence in the popular consciousness of this scary thing where computers are smarter than us and take over the world. But I don't think anyone that's actually working in that area sees AI ever being completely in charge of anything. There's always going to be a human element involved in it. And to be fair, at least nominally, there is supposed to be a human element in the Amazon process, where not just the firing decisions, but the ongoing evaluations, apparently managers have an ability to override what the computer comes up with. But what do we know from everything we've talked about? When one part of your job becomes more efficient, what happens? It gets backfilled, creates a vacuum where you've got more time now than you used to. And we tend to backfill that time with other work, busy work, something else, so that it becomes much easier to just say, yeah, okay, hit that okay button, approve whatever the algorithm says the performance evaluation is supposed to be, and get on with your other jobs. So I think that's some of what we're seeing with Amazon too, is that the human intervention is not really functioning as human intervention. And they seem to be letting the AI system run the show, probably more than it was designed to.
Yeah. I think that overall, the general gist is AI can be an extremely good tool at helping with job performance information, especially in conjunction with a human input. But I think there's that element, as you had mentioned, taking away biases and such, and just focusing on the output. And if you get the system set up right, the output can be really quite solid at helping in our future of the work environment. Mm-hmm. If we're thinking about more people working hybrid or straight remote or even a mix of all of it or just being full-time on campus, thinking about it from that perspective, right? I'm thinking about a manager having a team report to him or her, and that team is diverse in their work modalities. You know, having a tool that takes away, for example, that bias of, hey, I'm at the office every day. Now I'm seeing one of my employees at work every day. They suddenly become my favorite because we talk and we get to know each other more. And now they're friends-ish. That's going to be a challenge then to appropriately evaluate maybe somebody who's on in the office 2 days out of the week or 1 day or 3 days, or even that person who is part of your team that you only see every time in a Zoom meeting.
Yep.
And that's where these things can become very useful to help sort of balance that evaluation out and help create maybe a foundation to understand the manager's evaluation. As long as we don't go full extreme like HR Tracker, right? HR Tracker, I feel like, is the extreme version of what Amazon's doing, which I think we were pretty clear that we thought was a terrible idea.
And, you know, well, two things for those who are perhaps newer listeners who aren't familiar with HR Tracker. Go back and listen to our second episode.
The 40-hour work week, I think, is the first episode, full episode.
The 40-hour work week episode, I think, is where HR Tracker made its appearance the first time. The other thing, you're talking about objective data helping to cancel out, you know, managerial biases in the evaluation process. Even if, you know, you like the employee, their performance isn't great. I don't know if you've ever been in the position of having to give a negative performance evaluation. You know, it sucks. It's awkward. And it's even more awkward if you're like buddies with the person. So if you've got that, you know, that automated data with you, say, yeah, you know, we go way back, but yeah, look at these numbers. Yeah, we got to do something. So I think it makes it easier for a manager to do the hard part of the job sometimes and say, look, these are things you need to work on. And it takes some of the onus and some of the awkwardness off the shoulders of the person and just puts it on the data, potentially.
See, I think that's what's huge. The potential there is so monumental, is moving the onus from the manager to the facts, in essence, right? Yep. I really find it that our evaluation process is really guided by the personality of your manager. And by that, I mean, if you have somebody who's non-confrontational by nature as a manager and they're evaluating their reports, they're going to be more likely to avoid those negative performance aspects that they have to actually critique you on and tell you, how do you get better there? Yep. That's not good.
No.
To want to be truthful and transparent about, hey, you need to work on this, instead of giving that, okay, you're doing just fine, let me just give you that check. Okay, you're meeting expectations, let's move on. No, no, let's be real. Let's get the real evaluation going, because now we have this tool to help support that. In my context, I would have a lot of students who would, you know, they were missing an assignment, or they're like, it was going to be late, or they were going to have to move a test or whatever, or grandparent died and whatever. And one of the things I did is I changed it where it's like, if you have to miss any graded assignment, you have to go to our dean of students office to get verification for the reason. And the reason I did that is because it took any personal bias away from it. Because I don't know about you, but I'm more inclined to be lenient to a student who I know is a good student.
Yeah, it's true.
Versus a student that I don't know. Yeah. And that's not fair, right? I just don't think that's fair.
True.
And it makes it so much easier if I take it out of my hands and go, hey, you got to go to the dean of students office. If they send me a letter with verification of your issue, whatever that is, it could be an illness, it could be a death, whatever, it's all good.
So you kind of proceduralize it, basically.
Right.
Follow these steps. If this results, this is the outcome.
I work with you then, right? It's as easy as that. And it's so good because it just means that everybody has been treated fairly in that process.
You know, sometime over the last year or two, at my university, we started getting emails from some office when a student has had some event happen in their life that will necessitate something, like you said, assignment extensions or whatever. I never gave it a whole lot of thought. Like, this just started happening one day. But it is kind of helpful, you know. So it kind of primes you, say, okay, this student's having like legit issues. If they come to you, we can vouch for them, kind of thing. So there's less questioning and, oh God, what do I do in this situation going on my end? It kind of accomplishes what you're saying. I wonder if that was the genesis of that new procedure, because I like it. You know, it like you said, it takes my own biases out of the equation and makes it clear that this has been given the okay or it hasn't.
Yeah. And it's also, there's a team that's dedicated to verifying some of those details, right? Oh, we need a copy of the obituary, the note from your doctor, whatever it is.
We need someone to attend the funeral. We need to see the body.
We need to see the body. Pictures of it. Or it didn't happen. God, that's morbid. But, you know, it's true though, right? I've appreciated that because it takes that personal bias away.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this AI system can be super helpful in a manager-employee exchange situation and talking about actual performance and how they're doing. I think there's clearly something missing with regards to like personality challenges, right? Because there's some people who are difficult to work with, or they don't work well with others. They don't play in a team nice.
Yeah. We see that in sports all the time, right? Like the basketball player whose individual stats aren't great, but the whole team, the other four guys on the floor collectively play better when he's on the floor.
Right.
How do you capture that in, you know, an algorithmic sort of way?
Exactly. And that's difficult, right? That's where you need the human side of it.
Yep.
You know, if that person is detracting from getting things done, even though they get their work done at a very efficient level, that's not good either, right? If it's pulling a team's efficiency down, that doesn't mean you fire the person. Maybe they need to be reassigned into a different role or in a different context in some way. But people are sticky. And I don't know if people know what I mean by sticky, is that when you have a certain skill or competence, it's very difficult to move you into a different position, right? If you're good at programming in Java, moving you into programming for COBOL might be a stretch because it's going to take you so much time to get up to speed. Or if you're good at sales, you're just a natural at selling things and building those relationships and closing big deals and just cool as a cucumber under pressure like that, you're probably not going to be well suited to a back end job where you're sitting in front of a computer doing analysis such stuff. It's just probably not in your strengths.
And then you need the human manager to evaluate the trade-off there. Say, okay, this person's really great at this, really bad for these other reasons. Is it worth keeping them on or not? It's a human decision at that point.
Right, right.
And a similar vein, a potential downside of automated evaluation is that it opens itself up to employees gaming the system. What's the term for that? When you play to the measures, basically, you know.
You play to the measures, right? Yeah. You focus in on the things that are being measured and ignore those.
Just the things being measured and nothing else.
Right.
And so it's notoriously difficult for a computer to understand when that's happening. But the human can see that quite easily, usually. So again, there's a lot of potential here. There's all the benefits of the human mind, all the benefits of computational power. You got to put them together. Can't just rely on replacing one with the other, like what seems to be happening in these news stories. And that's my coming back to my frustration about this is you look at the comment sections of these articles and Reddit threads and such, and we're very much looking to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
Yes.
Say, get rid of all this AI nonsense. Da, da, da. And that's what's going to happen if it's misused like this.
And I think to that end too, that's the dichotomy of people's reactions today, right? It's either it's got to be all something or nothing of something. And that's the challenge is that no, just because it's being misused here doesn't mean we can't get it right. The question is, how do we encourage and incentivize organizations to do it the right way.
Right.
And I think, right, in the case of Amazon, it's by maybe not buying from Amazon until they get less finicky with their employees. But its convenience is outweighing some of the negativity.
You can't argue with the results. I mean, throughout this pandemic, Amazon has been quite incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of, just as an aside, I keep thinking about how AI is firing people. And one of the articles that we had found by Victor Tangerman at futurism.com. He said, this time, artificial intelligence is literally taking jobs. And that immediately triggered that whole South Park thing with they took our jobs thing with the immigrants and such. And it's like, if it's not the immigrants, it's now the, now I don't want to get political or anything like that, but it's just kind of funny how this theme of they're taking our jobs, it's now AI is the threat though.
You know, and that's funny because it's been going on for so long. We've always had these fears of automation taking our jobs. And it's so far, it's not I mean, yeah, it's replaced humans in some capacities, usually like really unpleasant, dangerous, boring types of jobs. Like, we've added jobs elsewhere to compensate. Like, it's worked out okay so far. But this time...
Exactly. Yeah. And that tends to be my sort of argument against the universal basic income at the moment. We're not at a point where we're seeing huge job losses because of automation. Mm-hmm. We see an evolution of industries, right? The more automated we get, that means there's more jobs needed in manufacturing or more jobs needed for maintenance of these, especially like automated equipment, let's say, that it might not be run by a person, but people got to take care of these things and keep them going.
Mm-hmm. And that's a skilled job.
Right. So we see these shifts going on. I mean, we no longer really mine coal the way we once did, but now we have to install solar panels and wind turbines. So there's these shifts, and that's what I think happens in that process. But anyway, that was just a little aside. It gets me thinking exactly as you said. We've been talking about people losing their jobs since, I think, what, the 20s?
At least.
The Industrial Revolution. Right. And how automation is going to eventually get rid of all the jobs. And if we go back even further, you know, Alexander Hamilton intentionally wanted to make the U.S. more manufacturing oriented because it was going to be a tool to get rid of slavery. Mm-hmm. And so manufacturing was the great equalizer. At least that was the thought in the 1700s, you know? And so I still think we're a long way away before humans are replaced by technology. Because there's going to be human intervention needed in so many different areas and new jobs created because of these changes and transitions in the way we do things.
And hey, maybe we'll reach a point where we don't all have to work 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. We can all work 10 hours a week and the machines can do the rest. And
we still get paid.
We still get paid.
And have good lives.
And everything's good.
Enjoy the work-life balance and be able to survive off that reduced hour paycheck versus having to work four jobs.
Which sounds ridiculous, but if you look at where technology has come in the last 100 years, we could be closer, a lot closer to that than we are if we wanted to be.
I think we could easily. I think we could be there.
In some ways, yeah.
We could certainly start having that push. Yeah. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Now, I think we've saved the crown jewel of how bad Amazon implemented this project to the end here. And that's with how they send those emails, or at least who signs off on it. And I'm using this term loosely.
Yeah.
They have these auto-generated emails that are signed with people with Indian names.
Almost exclusively, based on what we're seeing in these articles. Bhutan Banerjee, Pavini G, Bhutan again.
I mean...
Gangadhar. Gangadhar M.
Think about that.
They're all Indian names.
Yeah.
Though they're written by a machine.
And we went through that outsourcing challenge with India, right? There was a lot of concerns about outsourcing to India. It was going to take a lot of service-related jobs and such. And it did have some impact for sure. But that pendulum swung out. It swung back because they weren't able to necessarily handle all of the challenges that were needed to be taken care of here. So we've seen a rebalancing in a lot of ways. But talk about creating a hatred toward a culture that's not even really to blame here, you know?
And admittedly, this is a bit of a conspiracy theory on our part, but it does seem really strange that they're signing off all these automated, written by computer emails with Indian names. Is that a strategic decision, like you're saying? Or is someone, maybe this has been outsourced and those are actual people who are applying their names to these emails, but if you look at the examples in these articles, it doesn't seem that way. You know, you'll have the same name applied to emails that wouldn't come from the same person, basically.
Right.
So it kind of seems like these are fake names. Why are they all Indian names? If anyone knows anything about the backstory here, we'd be curious. Because it does seem like they're outsourcing the negative reaction to this.
Right.
Oh, it's some offshore Indian company that's doing this.
The Amazon leadership gets to point their finger. No, it's somebody in India.
That was a mistake made
over there.
Just remember. Yeah.
When you point your finger, that means there's three fingers pointing back at you, Amazon. Actually, I am curious, though. I mean, it is sort of a conspiracy theory on our part. But truly, though, the number of examples we've seen using these Indian names as the signature on these emails is pointing to more smoke about it. And is it creating some sort of xenophobic type perceptions or anger towards an entire group of people who...
Or playing on xenophobic perceptions.
or playing on Zeta. You're right. I mean, what's, you know, I honestly don't trust Amazon very much. I especially as we see more information coming out about all that, you just kind of feel a little icky.
It does start to feel like Walmart circa 2003 or something, where you spent a lot of money with this company and you're just starting to think, I don't know, man. It's starting to get a little bit creepy, isn't it?
Yep, it is. And that's just it. But I think if any of you guys know the story behind who's signing off on these emails or more about the way the system works, we're all ears. We want to hear about it.
If anyone's experienced this from either side of the equation, on the receiving end or if you work at Amazon, we'd love to hear.
Yeah. And in particular, if you know of other organizations who are using something similar to this, it would be good to know. Very curious. This is a fascinating and awful thing. But I want to hear good things too. I want to hear if there's companies that are doing this right in some way.
And that's the thing. You wouldn't hear about it. If a company's doing it right, it wouldn't even be noticeable, really. It would just be part of the job.
Right. And that's why I want to hear if there's anybody who's got an organization that's doing it well.
Exactly. Good point.
Anyway.
Let us know.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, folks.
I got a Amazon delivery coming, so I got to sign off. I probably do, unfortunately.
Actually, I probably do, sadly. I just got billed for my Amazon Prime for this year. Yeah. So, man, if it, they really do, right? That's what companies have done today, is they've really created an environment where it's hard to let it go because of the incredible convenience.
They've done incredible stuff. I mean, they've earned their success, but yeah, they've kind of made us dependent on them.
Yeah. And it's tough because you look at, I guess I could break away from Amazon the same way that I broke away from Facebook, which was probably one of the better decisions that I've made in my life.
Yeah.
In that sense, in terms of, you know, product usage. But
and you have to like find out where to buy stuff. Like, where do you even get stuff nowadays? Like some things, again, this is like Walmart was 20 years ago. When you start realizing, like, I don't know where to buy like pillows besides going to Walmart. It's starting to feel like that with Amazon. You know, there are some things where, like, where would you go to buy these things?
Or at least for the prices offered, right? I mean, that's been another huge...
And the selection.
Yeah. Sometimes it's too much, though. Yep. Like, there's just too much choice.
Yep.
But that's a whole another aside.
Yes.
We'd love to hear from you guys. Please make sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. Please rate it. We would love to have you rate it. And definitely send us an email, businessparadox.com. So it's just, what is it? input@businessparadox.com. Just reach out to us. Let us know.
Twitter. @businessparadox.
We're also on Reddit, too. We're going to start using those handles a little bit more. We've got some stuff that we're going to be getting on there, too. And we're considering even doing an Ask Me Anything, an AMA, as they call it. So keep an eye out.
Stay tuned.
Thanks, everybody.
So long, folks.
The Busyness Paradox is distributed by Paul Harvey and Frank Butler. Our theme music is adapted from It's Business Time by Jermaine Clements and Brett McKenzie. Our production manager is Justin One Take. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send questions, comments, or ideas for future episode topics to input@businessparadox.com or find us on Twitter. Also, be sure to visit our website, businessparadox.com, to read our blog posts and for links to the articles and other resources mentioned in today's show. Finally, please take a moment to rate and follow or subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast provider.